Good evening. This is side two of tape 365, and it's December the 1st, 1978. Mae Russell in Carmel. In addition to the suicide studies, I think it's important to separate the division of not only who was murdered at close range, who died among this huge amount of people, but who lived. As I said, there's people under house arrest right now in Guyana. There's still 40 or 50 under house arrest in a hotel. It'll be interesting to see if they're all white. I understand that the goon squad, known as the basketball team, was in Georgetown and the day that the mass so-called suicide, the forced murders, took place, and that they're the cleanup team, and that these are the people that the handful of remaining people are afraid of, because they were the torturers, the people that did the beatings, that watched the field workers for 12 hours, you know, and had guns to see that no one escaped and so forth. Who lived? We know Mark Lane and Charles Gary lived, but the question was how many blacks, the handful that flew in to Kennedy Airport this week, but the question is how many out of that whole group are the goon squad that will not be prosecuted for killing the people in the compound. You see, we'll be told that those people chose suicide. And I guess the only murder charges will probably be the ones for the congressman and the newspaper people and the shooting of the aides at the airport, and not for the murders inside Jonestown. It's as if those people had no legal rights. They were forced to die, and nobody will be charged for their deaths. Now, one important category of research to follow in this are the finances, the money that Jim Jones had in Indiana, and then the money in Brazil and up in Ukiah, San Francisco, and the purchase of Guyana, and then the cold cash he had left, the use of aliases of various people involved here, and, of course, there's the telltale diary. It wouldn't go without a good communist plot, even though he was accused or they suggested that he'd been with the CIA in Brazil and that had at U.S. Embassy and higher-ups in the federal government. Right away on the corpse, there was supposed to be a suicide note left talking about communism, and the remark made when these millions of dollars were put in a footlocker, told to take out to the jungle, was give it to the Soviet embassy. I'm very sure that it wasn't intended for the Soviet embassy. But that was the story when the fascist concentration camp broke apart. They still thought of saving the money. In fact, the men that took the money out had seen their wife and children die inside. And instead of rushing in to save them, they took the trunk with the money and went out in the forest. Of course, it'll be interesting to see the past arrest of Jim Jones and his links with organized crime. That's one section of its own. And in the psychological profile of Jim Jones, you see all kinds of stories about being lonely as a child, and his mother worked in a factory, and his father was gassed in World War I. And we get that human interest story that we got about Lee Harvey Oswald and his family, or James Earl Ray and his family. I remember Life magazine had a picture of James Earl Ray after he was charged with killing Martin Luther King, and it made out that they were terrible derelicts, that hand-to-mouth, the poorest kind of people hardly existing. And now you hear the House Select Committee on Assassinations telling about the high tentacles of politics that James Earl Ray's two brothers had in St. Louis, Missouri, and the contract to kill Martin Luther King. And they had clout around town, even though they are real bums. They were with the extreme right wing, and they were hardly separated because he was just a loner. We'll get that psychological profile of Jim Jones as compared to the political clout he had. It's interesting that the State Department got more mail on Jim Jones than almost any single thing in the year 1977, 1978, and assured everybody that they had been to Guyana from Georgetown to Jonestown at least 20 times or more, and that everything was all right. It was only Congressman Ryan who had direct experiences. Friends of his or constituents that had disappeared or died, and that touched his heart, and that he personally said, "What the hell, I'm going down there." The State Department did nothing to protect the people down there. They were told of these beatings, and articles were written. New West had an article. The other congressmen seemed to pass it off, and everyone passed the buck, the FBI, the State Department, and I think they did it with good reason, because if it was a medical control center, then they were ordered not to touch it. It's similar to the Manson family being at the Spahn Ranch in California, and the sheriff's office got complaints all the time, and they were ordered to turn the face down and not to touch it, that you don't touch Charlie. And I think the federal government, from Jimmy Carter and Mr. Brzezinski right on down through health, educational, welfare, and every government agency was instructed, don't touch them, but in the event that the armor is cracked, then everyone be prepared to die. And I think that after New West and after Congressman Ryan got interested in this and some lawsuits were coming up in San Francisco, they had to go ahead and kill everybody before anyone got any idea of what was going on there. I will take all of the articles on the Ukiah Church and study those. He went from Brazil with $100,000 and opened up a mental institution in Ukiah, which could be the beginning of mind and brain control. It was called Happy Acres. And it wasn't just a Happy Acres farm. There was a guard, watchdogs, a watchtower, sentinels, barbed wire. There was secrecy wherever Jim Jones goes. And if he has the clout to make social changes, produce votes, and be among the in crowd, there's a picture again in People this week of him with George Moscone and Rosalind Carter. He had protection of a kind, because it's really hard to break that inner circle unless you're producing something that the government wants. And to be able to produce 2,000 votes is nothing. Martin Luther King could have a million people behind him at the Washington Monument, the Poor People's March, or 500,000. And he had no barbed wire and no guns and no stories of beating and clubbing. So the protection that he had from the San Francisco police, the juvenile courts, the Attorney General's office in California, the United States Attorney General, the Congress, the State Department, the Guyana government, the protection he had is totally different than the profile. The blame will be put on Jim Jones for what happened, just as World War II was put upon Adolf Hitler or Watergate was put upon Richard Nixon. But it's only a fraction of the problem, and that's one thing to keep very clear, is that the funding and the political clout before the act was very, very powerful. But that not only was powerful, but what did they do after Congressman Ryan was there? The main thing to keep in mind out of all of this is that no matter what kind of a nut Jim Jones was, no matter what he said he wanted, no matter how the people fell for him, what they gave him, he had the clout that after a United States congressman was killed and some major newspaper people from this country, after they were killed, Guyana government that was put in by the CIA wouldn't touch the place.
Oh, you'll have
Guyana first said, we can't come in until the next day. It's 5 o'clock at night and it's dark and everyone had to stay out in the darkness. The first hint that the government had a hands-off policy was that there was an army plane Guyana persons at the airport. And when these shootings took place and these dead bodies were on the ground, the survivors ran over and said, we need some help. They had some guns, and they said, no, we can't interfere. And then it got dark, and the next statement was, we can't interfere. The radio towers mysteriously went out in Jonestown on Saturday morning. Their only communication was San Francisco. There were no telephones. It reminded me of the police car in Dallas, Texas, after Kennedy was killed, or the switchboards at the White House, the police cars in Memphis, Tennessee, that radio communication was cut off for a few moments. Jonestown radio tower to San Francisco wasn't working. And the excuse for not getting in was that it was dark, even though we have helicopters that can light up the whole jungle. We've used them in Vietnam, and the LAPD uses them to light up parts of town. And they are available and not too far away. Then they said they were moving troops in cautiously, but on foot, and they had a long way to go in by foot, which just stalled time to get in there to see who was alive or who could be saved. And then they said they were flying in airplanes from the United States, but they'd have to be assembled in Georgetown and put together there. Every stalling device was used. I have a Washington Post from the Thursday after the murders. The deaths were on Saturday, and by Thursday they were sending in U.S. troops for bodies to get the bodies where they could have come in 4 days earlier, and everything was rotten and smelly and more difficult and expensive to identify. So there's no money to send the bodies back to San Francisco, but the 4 days that they rotted in the sun made the work so expensive into the millions of dollars, and storing in Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, the whole process of delaying it made it expensive. And instead of sending them right to San Francisco, where they could be handled, they sent them back there. Everything smacked racism. Some of the survivors were supposed to be sent to Charleston, South Carolina, according to a refugee redistribution point, a relocation, and they didn't even say anything about returning them to San Francisco, but to put them in South Carolina, where HEW would give them some money and they could pay the government back and work back as if they haven't worked hard enough. Many of these people were elderly people that had worked all of their life, that had homes they had given to Jim Jones, and they had savings, and they had Social Security checks. And the checks, many, many of them were going down there. And instead of cashing those for each person and using that 1 month's check for their burial, that goes into lump sum to pay back the government for delaying the body processing and fingerprinting, and it doesn't go back to the individual who's left in some refrigerator or coffin in Delaware at the present time. So somewhere to be relocated in South Carolina for whatever reason, I can't imagine. Yes, I can imagine. I take it back. I think I know what it was, as I said before. I think there's something they don't want you to see on these people. The first people to come home, the first seven or eight came in Kennedy Airport, are aged people. If they're senile, if their memory is gone, we can say they're in a state of shock. We haven't seen them for a long time, if ever before. And they sent the oldest, there are a few old people in, but there's no way of knowing the state of mind of whether these people were experimented on, the younger people, because they're dead and they're rotted. In 1972, Dr. Jolly West of the CIA, who was Jack Ruby's doctor at the time of the trial for shooting Lee Harvey Oswald, had moved out to California to the UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute, where they planned a Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence. This is Ronald Reagan's baby, and if he gets to be president, you can be sure they'll pull this one out again, out of the woodwork. This was planned in 1972, and the plans were submitted to the California Department of Health in Sacramento in April of 1973. And I'd written an article about this Neuropsychiatric Institute, exposed it as being part of the CIA, and said that it would involve third world people, it would involve the poor, the prisoners, the Indians, and I had a pamphlet here from a demonstration about this experience. It said, will the violence be against our children, third world people, women, prisoners, sexual minorities, and such as homosexuals and gays or lesbians, mental patients, and you? What is happening, I had asked about Jolly West, and I had some questions to answer. Well, a group of us got a hold of the presentation papers in Sacramento for the funding for this institute, this Neuropsychic Institute at UCLA, which came really under LEAA, Health Education and Welfare, but they wanted some California money also. And one of the studies that was to be done was an S.M. Heilig, H-E-I-L-I-G, doesn't even say doctor, he's got M-S-W, who wanted to study trends in self-directed violence and find out why there's so many suicides among young. And one of the studies was to work on suicide. Another was on violence in hyperkinetic children, and they would have child guidance clinics and study school-age children who suffer from this, in quotes, condition. Doesn't say anything about the parents being drugged or divorced or poverty or no jobs, unemployment, 10 or 12 to a room, television night and day, high sugar, white flour diet, if anything. They were to study these children, and one of the plans was to take mass amount of youth from the Los Angeles area and use them for experimentation and compare them to other children, normal children, as against hyperkinetic children, or suicidal people as against non-suicidal. A Sidney Cohn, who's on television all the time, an MD, was to study LSD and psychopharmacological effects of marijuana, heroin, and so forth. Another study was the prediction of violence. Now, this was the important thing. They were going to take well people and guess whether they had the potential for violence. American Indians, poor blacks, women. They were to do a study that I have here on whether women are violent when they menstruate. And they were to take cult murders. This is one of the subjects. A Dr. Jivan Tabibian, a PhD, not an MD, was to study skyjackings, cult murders, and violence by fanatics. They had a long list of subjects that they were going to study, and among them were the possibilities that this Jonestown was moved down. When I read the parallel of studies of mass suicide, former drug addicts, women, black, potentially violent, deprived, good cross-section of women, sexual fantasies and problems, which is what he instilled in them, telling them they had to be homosexuals and then they could study it. I thought this outline of what they planned in 1972 and 73 was interesting. In lieu of the fact that so many welfare children were sent from a continuation school in the San Francisco area in Oakland down to Jonestown, they were given to Jim Jones, this fanatic, this racist, bigot, torturer, man filled with sexual fantasies and fears, in quotes, problem children from the Bay Area. And all these people came from the Bay Area, were shipped down there. Now, we fought, we, means a handful of people, demonstrated up in Sacramento and fought this school, this neuropsychiatric study that was supposed to center on violence. This was in 1973, but it began to be started in 1972. And then in 1974, the Committee of the Judiciary of the United States Senate, and I've given you the address on the printed sheet, had a inquiry into individual rights and the federal role in human behavior, a book of 648 pages. And a good hunk of that book has to do with that UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute. And one of the things Sam Ervin wanted to know, Senator Sam Ervin, he wrote a letter, I want to know whether Dr. William Sweet, Dr. Vernon Mark, or Dr. Frank Ervin will perform any work at UCLA Project. I understand that Dr. Sweet and Ervin are now associated with the Neuropsychiatric Institute of UCLA and that they're closely aligned with types of projects to be conducted. Their work in the past has raised questions with regard to the constitutional right of the subjects of their experiments. Now, Drs. Vernon Mark and Dr. Frank Ervin and Dr. William Sweet went on the theory that the reason the blacks rioted in Newark and Detroit in 1967 is that there's something in the black makeup that causes some blacks to violence and others don't, and that they began brain experiments and electrode implants at Boston Hospital in Massachusetts. After the 67-68 riots, they began experimenting mental programs on blacks of all kinds and poor to see what makes them trigger off or how can we keep them happy. And then they moved out to UCLA to start working with his neuropsychiatric institute. Now, one of the things that was so frightening about that institute was the fact that they wanted a secret base, which reminds me very much of Jonestown. Incidentally, one of the coordinators of this neuropsychiatric project was James Fisk, a former high-ranking officer in the Los Angeles Police Department, who was linked to the criminal conspiracy section that Louis Tackwin had talked about and was teaching political science at UCLA. On page 357 of this book, I'll give you some quotations in the printed sheet, or give you the full letter. There's a letter by Dr. Louis Jolyon West, who was also identified at the time of the Senator Church hearings in 1976 as positively working with the CIA. He had written to J.M. Stubblebine. Mr. Stubblebine, at the time we were protesting this institute, was the head of State California Department of Mental Health. And he had written to Dr. Stubblebine, and he said, Dear Stubb, I am in possession of confidential information to the effect that the Army is prepared to turn over Nike missile bases to the state and local agencies for non-military purposes. They may look with special favor on health-related applications. Now, this is the federal Army that has missile bases, Nike missile bases, that they would turn over to the mental health department and a CIA doctor, Dr. West, who was working with men who were experimenting on blacks, poor blacks, Indians, children, and women, and they would give them this property. Such a Nike missile base is located in the Santa Monica Mountains. within a half hour's drive of the Neuropsychiatric Institute. That's UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. It is accessible, but relatively remote. Does that remind you of Jonestown? That is accessible. It's on a river. Boats came and go. Open harbor for weapons, medications, drugs, people visiting, but remote. It has its own airstrip, and the people in Guyana hardly knew the place existed after this came down and removed from Georgetown. And this Neuropsychiatric Institute would remove from Los Angeles proper. He said it's accessible, but it's remote. This site is securely fenced, includes various buildings and improvements, makes it suitable for prompt occupancy. If this site is available to the Neuropsychiatric Institute as a research facility, perhaps as an adjunct to our new Center for the Prevention of Violence, we could put it to very good use. We could make comparative studies that would be carried out there in an isolated but convenient location of experimental or model programs for the alteration of undesirable behavior. Now, this is important because Jim Jones was always telling them they were bad, that they were naughty, that they were guilty. They had to write letters if they didn't like his place and go to the United States. They were stripped and punished. Children were thrown down wells and put under water till they almost drowned. They were put under boards and locked up from 1 to 6 days under floorboards, empty hollow spaces. They were put, they were told they were naughty and bad and they had undesirable behavior, and they punished them. They used forms of punishment and drugs. Dr. Jolly West, such programs might include the control of drug or alcohol abuse or modification of chronic antisocial or impulsive aggression. Now, Jim Jones diagnosed these people as having sometimes chronic antisocial behavior. They couldn't eat dinner if they worked 12 hours a day until he gave a sermon and then told them they could eat. If he gave a sermon for 6 hours, they had to listen. If they objected, they were antisocial. They couldn't have male and female, boy or girl friends. They had to stay apart, sexually deprived, deprived of food, deprived of sleep. They simply worked all day. This is the work crew, the slaves, 14 people in those rooms, 10 by 12. And then if they behaved in a way that was impulsive or aggressive, they could be drugged and tested. And the purpose of this program in the Santa Monica Mountains, given by a military base, was to check antisocial behavior, impulsive aggressiveness. Dr. Jolly West went on and said the site could be an accommodation for conferences or retreat for instructions of selected groups of mental health-related professionals or other law enforcement personnel, parole officers, and special educators for whom demonstrations and participation would be effective modes of instruction. Now, this was written by Dr. Jolly West January 22nd, 1973, when they were going to get the Nike bases to test these poor people and deprivations and call in people for conferences. And that's why when I started this tape, I told you, Mark Lane said the doctors came from everywhere. It was a model medical clinic. After the murders came down of 914 people, at least, they found syringes, needles, drugs, poisons, and it was a huge medical clinic as much as it was anything else and not an educational institution. So who came for the conferences? Were these people being tested, controlled, electrodes, lobotomies, cloning? Were any of the women pregnant that had to be let to die? Were they implanted like Adolf Hitler did? He said he didn't want a birth rate, but were there experimentations of not male with female so that you wouldn't know if a woman got knocked up? Maybe he kept them separate with their homosexual relationships so that they could practice artificial insemination or cloning or taking seeds from women. We won't know what happened because there's a contract out to kill anybody who talks, but you have to ask these questions hard and clear, because sometimes in the last 2 weeks I've felt guilty that I went with a group of people, and as I say, there weren't many of us, and I had friends in prison that would have been victims of these electrode testing implants and so forth, such as Hugo Pinnell, the defendants of the San Quentin Six. There were people that I knew would be the first ones sent down there that I knew personally. And I went up there and fought it and demonstrated, and the team had a conference at UC Santa Cruz. And I fought that too. So I have to ask the question, if the Jonestown machetes began to be broken, the land was purchased, and it began to escalate in 1974. He has a clearing place with a medical clinic. Jim Jones himself didn't move down there until the New West article came out questioning what he was doing, his practices, and so forth. In 1977, he went down there for good because he was being fingered or linked to politicians up in California, too, and there was a custody fight over a child that he wanted to keep. He stayed down there, but to me, with my way of thinking, this is the only secret that would allow those bodies to rot beyond the time that they could do autopsies, to allow no press people in to see them, to turn everybody face down so you wouldn't see it was there, to have the contingency plan to murder any single person. You see, if the people left with Congressman Ryan, like this one woman did, and she was shot at point blank, they would talk and tell what was going on. One girl, Debbie, did leave and pleaded with people to investigate, and now her brother is being charged for killing Congressman Ryan and the others. And if all of this had been listened to when she pleaded with them, when she escaped from there through a ruse to get out and came back up to Berkeley, California, if they had listened to her, all of these people would be alive. But I don't think they were meant to be alive, and I wonder what kind of tests they were doing, or if anyone was keeping a record of the tests of sexual and emotional deprivation, lack of food, lack of sleep, constant guards. What would Jim Jones gain from this? They say, well, he got power from these people, too much power. But it doesn't explain why the State Department wouldn't touch him, how he knew Rosalynn Carter by telling her, you can write, call me at my special agency phone, how he was with the CIA in Brazil, where he got his $100,000 to go to Ukiah, how he broke federal communication laws by having conversations on radio towers that are strictly for business. How did he do all that, accumulate links to organized crime, millions of dollars, hit squads for anyone who talks? It had to do with some secrets, dark secrets behind those walls. Now, Jolly West concluded his letter to Mr. Stubblebine, M.D. He said, my understanding is that a direct request by the governor, that was Ronald Reagan, or another appropriate officer of the state or the Secretary of Defense would most likely produce prompt results. Needless to say, I stand available to participate in any way that might be helpful. Sincerely yours, Jolly West. There are 57 pages in this Committee of the Judiciary hearings on the UCLA project. And so I have to ask the question, if it was canceled, were the intents of studying the juveniles, the Indians, the blacks, the women, were the intents to ship them down to Guyana from the San Francisco area? Could they use a man with as much charisma as Jim Jones, whose father was in the Klan, who passed himself off as a liberal, as a man who helped the poor and loved the poor, but actually was an outright racist, and anyone around him knew it? He played tricks with their minds. He did magic tricks on curing their diseases. One of the interesting things is that the day before the hearings were finished and the report was done, there was a letter pleading for this neuropsychiatric institute to begin, and a man working under Ronald Reagan at the Education Welfare, Health and Welfare Secretary, Earl Bryan, wrote, in just 4 years in California, and these are what I call the California murders, we've had 62 mass murders by sick individuals. See, no links or no conspiracies, by sick individuals. And it said just last Tuesday we saw the killing of Oakland School Superintendent Marcus Foster. And on the basis of the killing of Dr. Foster last Tuesday, we have to go ahead and study these causes of violence. Now that we then learned in January or February 1974 that Dr. Foster was killed by Romero and Little of the CIA. And, of course, I had written extensively the SLA is the CIA, and it was a group of Nazis that said they were going to kill this man who was working, they called the Salt and Pepper Man, a black man working with a white man. The black man got cyanide bullets, Dr. Marcus Foster, And the school chief that worked with him only got a regular bullet, and he's still alive today. And that triggered off the notorious Seminese Liberation Army. At the end of the appeals of the group that wanted the study of violence, that institute down there, they said that there's callous disregard for public safety, so we have gone ahead and initiated a special task force within the Department of Health to study the existing laws and the administrative regulations relating to mentally disordered criminal offenders. And that they complained, the powers that be that wanted this, Earl Bryan, complained that his hands were tied in initiating the Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence. It was pigeonholed by the legislation, the California legislation that year, and that they would have to go about finding another means, go ahead and get a special force going. And what I fear is that because the California Assembly cut off the money for the school to study the causes of violence at UCLA, that it went into Jim Jones' operation and was shipped down to Guyana. And that is possibly the place where people could be tested. And when anybody came in to see what was happening, they were all prepared to die, and those that weren't were poisoned. My worst fear is that the State Department, HEW, the FBI, the San Francisco Police, the Los Angeles Police, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the Defense Department all knew what was going on in Guyana, and therefore, when Congressman Ryan went there, they had to let him die and be sacrificed. This is a broad subject, and I hope that my first week on this isn't too confusing. We'll do much more in the weeks to come, and if you had any questions, write or call me, and I'll put them on the tape for you and include them in the tapes. This is Mae Bressel and Carmel. Next week, I'll also do more about the killing of Mayor Moscone and Harvey Milk in San Francisco and the links to People's Temple.